It all started with a very simple idea. Tell the stories of how successful middle market CEOs made it to the corner office. I'm Brand Handley, founder and managing director of Resource Options International, or ROI. We're the USA's premier executive search firm focused exclusively on empowering middle market companies to attract, hire, and retain A players while transforming top executives' careers and lives. ROI's Into the Corner office is dedicated to discovering how middle market CEOs advance their career, and we're making these remarkable and sometimes quite unbelievable stories available to you for the very first time. Listen and learn about the challenges they've overcome, the interesting people they've met along the way, and the lessons learned that steered these executives' unique journey into a middle market corner office of their own. I know you enjoy these CEO stories as much as I've enjoyed recording them. So thank you for listening today. And if you like what you've heard, rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm looking forward to you joining me on the next great middle market CEO adventure into the corner office. My guest today is Herb Cogliano, former CEO of Sullivan & Cogliano IT Staffing and Workplace Solutions, and now leads his own advisory practice leveraging the Scaling Up Performance Platform. As a business coach, experienced CEO Scaling Up practitioner, and professor of the Scaling Up Master's Business Course, Herb has learned firsthand what it takes to overcome many business challenges. He is pursuing his passion of working with leaders of growth companies to achieve more freedom by helping them create industry-leading strategies, a culture of accountability, flawless execution, along with a healthy cash flow with their organizations. Herb sold his plus 50-year-old, privately held, family-owned technology staffing and workplace solutions firm back in 2018. Sullivan & Cogliano joined a select group of companies that have appeared on the Inc. 5000 fastest-growing company list multiple times. Herb is a graduate of Boston College and lives in the Boston area with his family. Herb Cogliano, welcome into the corner office.
Hello, Brandt. Good afternoon to you and all your listeners. And I'm very excited to be here today.
Where does the podcast find you today, Herb?
I am based just outside of Boston.
Okay, got it. Spring has sprung up there, or still getting a little cold weather?
No, it's actually sprung. We do have a little bit of rain today, but in general, it's been beautiful.
Gotta love it. Well, we always like to kick the podcast off to learn a little bit about the earlier years, Herb. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what your early family life was like.
Yeah, so very fortunate, Brandt. I grew up in a family business. My father started a staffing agency in 1966.
Wow.
And created a full service offering for a variety of type of jobs, whether it was design drafting, manufacturing, office, light industrial personnel. And we did that for years throughout the New England area.
Yeah. And so it was regional only for the most part.
Yeah. In the first 20 plus years or so, it was regional, but very successful, as you can imagine, being kind of an early pioneer in the industry. And I have just wonderful memories of talking about business with the family around the dinner table, understanding the challenges and what that was like running a family business. And then ultimately, the gratification that our family got from helping people find meaningful employment.
Yeah, great industry to be in. We share that same passion. Both dad and mom involved in the business, brothers and sisters?
Yeah, they were. All of us actually were. My mother, my father, my older sister, and my two brothers. And, you know, obviously various stages, various durations of their careers. And it was just an incredible journey.
Well, I know you spent about 30 years there, and we'll get into that earlier. And you must have been in very short pants at the time, because I know you don't have quite that many years on you. But how old were you when you first got involved?
So my father worked quite a bit, as you can imagine. So any chance I could to go into the business, school breaks, weekends, you name it, I loved to go in there with him.
Yeah.
So I remember as a young boy, probably in sixth, seventh grade, going in weekends doing work. He'd set me up. I'd do filing. I'd do whatever he needed. But then in high school, I started to work every summer and every break. And he sent us out on assignments working for clients. And then we ultimately started to work inside the company in the various departments.
Wow. Wow. That's great. That's great. And obviously, you learned a lot about entrepreneurialism during those days. What were some of the things that you think back and remember about those early years and, you know, growing up and literally working a family business day in and day out?
Number one, I think it was grit, how owning and running and growing a business is not easy, and you need to be resilient.
Yeah.
Because things are not going to go your way. And do you give up or do you double down because you're doing it for the people you love and employees and their families? So yeah. I learned a lot about perseverance. I learned a lot about having integrity. Your word is your reputation, and you can't afford to lose that. It's too important in life. So that currency of integrity with reputation was very important and instilled in me since I was a young man. And then finally, I think it's the power of purpose. Mm. Doing work that has meaning and doing it with people that you really enjoy working with and care for.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Did you have any time for school?
You know what? I loved school, but I viewed work as kind of a learning opportunity. So I loved school. I went to school for business. Not many people know what they want to do at a young age. And I knew immediately I was going to be an entrepreneur, no questions asked.
Huh. What do you think led you to that? Just dad and the business and at home and what it took to kind of make it successful and the fact that you like that, or were there other influences that led you to that assumption?
So I think my mother and father were incredible role models. My grandfather was a very successful businessman in his day in real estate and insurance. And my mother was one of 10 siblings.
Wow.
So that was family working together, and entrepreneurism was baked into the DNA of my mom and dad. I also think that seeing business as a vehicle to create and provide opportunities for myself, my family, and my people was always something that resonated. And I was always reading books about famous business people's autobiography, whether it was Forbes, Iacocca, John Rockefeller. And as a young boy, I kept reading and learning from these type of people.
I love that. And did you pursue any other entrepreneurial things as a kid? I mean, did you have the standard paper route, or did the lawns in your neighborhood, or snow removal, or anything like that?
I honestly thought that working in our business was very entrepreneurial, because my father never kept me in one place. He wanted me to go out and do work for clients to see what that was like to be a temporary. He wanted me to work with different leaders in the company so that I could see different styles of leadership and management. That was very important. And then he said, you go out. And I worked as a dishwasher in an Italian restaurant. I worked as a day laborer for a construction company. I worked at a gas station pumping gas. And I learned a lot about how I wanted to be in control of my career and be supportive about helping other people have great careers inside our company.
Yeah, cool. Well, you went on to Boston College and got your business degree there. Was that kind of a, you know, assumed thing that you would do? Did mom and dad encourage you that? Or was there a pull to go straight into the family business and start working full time?
No, I think my mother and father were very big on education. My father talked incessantly about education, being empowerment, and giving you a vehicle to get to different places in your life. And so I never considered not going. I'm going to tell you a quick story because, Brant, many people don't know this. I called the college as a freshman in high school, and I got admissions on the phone, and I said, I want to come to your school in 4 years. What do I need to do? And I think the woman, the woman on the other end of the line was so patient with me, but I almost felt like I heard her jaw drop. She'd never heard of, you know, what am I, 15 in freshman? But I was just really focused. I just, again, I knew what I wanted and I made a plan to get it. And I have no regrets. I enjoyed my 4 years in college very much.
And you went on to get an MBA as well, I believe, correct?
I did. Yeah. I think I took the long route on this, Brant, because I didn't go back for my MBA until I turned 50.
Ah.
So not the way most people do it, but I thought it was time to challenge myself in a different way outside of the business, get some academic strengthening of the business skills. And at that time of my life, it turned out to be a perfect decision.
Well, I bet you are probably one of the few people in your graduating class from undergrad that went in and became a president of the company right away.
You know, what was interesting about the time I did that is that they started to introduce elements of online classes. So I had several classes where I had people from Japan, from Italy, from England that were all part of my cohort. And that made it actually very interesting in getting a master's degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrific. And following your undergraduate, you went straight back to the company business. I mean, the family business. Was there any hesitation with that? Did you, you know, consider going to the outside, working for someone else, getting some experience, mom and dad suggesting it, or was it always kind of assumed that you'd go right into the family firm?
No, it was actually, I was interviewing, I think at the time, I'm dating myself now, but IBM, Wang, Prime, Computer Vision, Data General, all the big names in the Massachusetts area when I was coming out of college. And I remember my father saying to me, do me a favor, I want to talk to you before you make a final decision. And as I was interviewing with these other companies, other classmates, all I could hear from them was, I'm going to go to this company for 2 years and I'm going to use their management training program. And then I'm going to leave and I'm going to use that experience to get to this company. And I was brought up very loyal and very committed. And it just seemed like it was, I'm going to jump from here to here to here. And not that that's wrong, it just didn't fit me. So when I went back and talked to my father, he said, look, I know you have these options that you can take. I have something that I think you'll enjoy. And he rolled it out to me. And I said, I'm going to work hard either way, but why not work hard for people I love and care about? And I had no regret. I never looked back.
And what did you come in to do with that first job coming out of college?
Yeah, our company was manual. We had very limited automation. My father got burnt implementing a early software package for the staffing industry. And he was not comfortable with computers. And I had a minor in computer science with marketing and business and felt comfortable for somebody who's 20, 21 years old, as you can imagine.
Right.
But my first project was to be a business analyst, work with the users, and try and map the right software provider to our business work and get the system up and automated. And it ended up being a great way for me to know the managers, know the business, understand the process, and get buy-in by helping the managers make it more efficient.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have leadership responsibilities straight away, Herb?
I started out with special projects like that, and then I ultimately got leadership responsibility after.
Yeah, and these were probably some long-term employees with the company. Yeah. Was that difficult kind of coming in as the owner's son with management responsibility over others that had been there longer than you?
I think it's fair to say there was definitely some transition that would go to that brand. I think that's a fair statement. But I also, you have to understand people's personality. And I had been working with people from a very young age. I had saw the way my father and mother worked and managed people. I understood that each relationship is unique. You cannot cookie cut the way you manage people. It's got to be specific. And I think the fact that I worked so much when I was younger, I think I earned a lot of their respect early, and I never took them for granted. But was it perfect? No, of course it wasn't.
Yeah. Did you work directly for your dad, or did he have you, be trained by other managers in the business that had been there maybe, more senior or had been there longer than you had?
Yeah, special projects, I worked directly for him. And then when I was in some of the business units, I worked for some of those other managers. They were absolutely wonderful managers. My father had done an incredible job of putting together a senior team of people that had been with him for a while. And we had some great relationships and times together.
Yeah. What were some of those early leadership lessons that you took away, Herb, during those, let's say those first decade or so with the company coming out of college?
I think number one, leadership is not one size fits all. I think you have to be true to yourself, and you have to be willing to adapt to different styles to make, you need to lead people uniquely based upon the style with them that will help bring out the best in them. Hmm. Some people you got to be very direct, straightforward. Other people you need to be a little bit more patient, more supportive. And learning that young was definitely a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. And with regards to the responsibilities, did dad kind of have you set up for succession planning, or did that evolve over time? How did you, eventually move into that, particularly with brothers and sisters involved in the business? Was there some competitiveness there?
No, I think my father and my mother were very thoughtful. They worked hard, and they knew that a good succession plan is a thoughtful process that can take years to do it right. So like any good succession plan, you want the siblings to know the business. You want them to have increasing responsibility over time. You need them to show accomplishment with that increasing responsibility. And if they ultimately can handle that and they want that, they can potentially be part of that ultimate succession plan, which is what they did with us.
Mm-hmm. And did your siblings stay involved as you grew in those leadership responsibilities?
Yeah, they did. The only sibling was my sister that kind of at an earlier age, she taught me the business, really a lot of it when I first came in. She decided that she wanted a different path outside of the family business. And I'm so happy because that was the right decision for her.
Yeah, cool. And then you eventually took over the CEO job from your father. Did he retire? Was it kind of a transition succession in that respect, or, something that, allowed them to, kind of sail off into the sunset or have a retirement, or did they stay involved in the business after you took over the corner office?
Yeah, no, again, it was kind of a phased approach. So for several years prior, we started to be introduced to the bankers, the lawyers, the accountants, all the important kind of advisors that would support the CEO. Then ultimately he became chairman. So there was more like quarterly meetings, you know, what are the financial targets? Where are we at in our strategic plan? Very, very high level quarterly. And then it became less and less. And my father retired. My mother, unfortunately, her health was not great. And I'm just so happy he got to spend more time with her after both of them working so hard for so many years.
Yeah, cool. And then the tough decision came along to exit the business. So I want to hear a little bit about that. And then, of course, get into your more recent work, you know, in the coaching and scaling up field.
Yeah. So I think every family business will have an exit. It's a question of when the timing is right for all of you. So for one company, it could be 10 years. For another company, it could be 250. But I think where we were at our exit is my parents still had shares in the company. They were significantly older. Me and my siblings were in different stages of our career. We had differing interests. And I think it was just the right time to maximize the company while also preserving the family. And I think the timing for us was great. And yet we were still young enough that none of us wanted to retire. We just wanted to maybe do some different things. And I thought of what I most enjoyed in my journey. And my father and another gentleman, Bill Chaplin, were my coach. And I decided that I wanted to continue their work and coach other CEOs like me and help them avoid some of the pitfalls that I had in growing and scaling our company.
Yeah.
I've been doing that now for over 5 years. I have clients all around the world, and it's been an incredible pivot and journey for me and my family.
Was the business sold in the end?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, tell us about Aspire and more importantly, the inspiration for Aspire. I think you've given us a little bit of a prelude on that, but what really kind of, you know, got you excited about the coaching part? Were you doing part of that in the previous business? Was that something that you kind of had as an adjunct to your staffing business? Or, you know, did you kind of develop that as a skill set, you know, on the side?
Yeah, I would say, Brandt, it was a skill set. And most mid-market companies, professional service companies, the owners are the brand, and they're normally the people that are doing a lot of the sales, right? Because you're in services and you're selling yourself, and I was selling our company. And so you get really good at sales and accounts and all those things. And that was helpful for many years. But what I learned was the pivot for me was in scaling up the company to work on the company versus in the company,
right.
I had to spend more time on developing, growing the people in it versus growing new accounts.
Yeah.
And when I made that pivot, I was able to help more people develop quicker. They, working in the business, helped grow the overall company even quicker. And it allowed me to work on more growth-oriented activities versus what's the next big account I'm going to bring in.
Got it. And are you focusing, again, mostly with middle market CEOs, family businesses, sole proprietors? Give us a little feel for your practice.
Yeah, so I work mostly with business owners and their senior leadership team. They're normally between a couple of million in $100 million in revenue. They are very growth oriented, where the leadership team is minimally looking to double every 3 to 5 years.
Right.
They have a thirst for professional and personal development. The CEO values and invests in education in development, and they have a bias for taking action about doing something about it.
Mm. And typically, are they in one particular sector? I know that your staffing business was IT focused. I know you're in other fields as well. Yeah. Or are you agnostic across various industries and sectors?
No, I'm pretty much agnostic. I find that has not been the impediment to scaling up the industry experience. It's been the lack of experience with understanding the scaling up principles.
Hmm. And do you have other coaches that work with you, or are you a single shingle type of advisor in that regard? You know, how do you scale with regards to the support of others?
Yeah, I'm part of a global coaches network, but my practice is my own.
Yeah.
I'm a boutique. I'm quite frankly comfortable with the clients I have because we have a shared purpose. We have shared values and we have a shared vision of where we want to help their company grow. And at this stage in my career, in my life, I only want to work with the best, and that's why it's a boutique and you have to be interviewed to be accepted.
Great. And do most of your new clients come from referrals? Do you do any business development efforts? How do folks get attracted to you?
I think referrals and reputation is probably number one. I think number two, I'm also teaching the master's course in scaling up. And a lot of my graduating students are, I need a coach. You taught me this. Would you be my coach?
Right.
And I have so many wonderful relationships and I've seen the work they've done in class. And that is one of the best interviews I could ever have in finding out if they're going to be a good scaling up client.
Yeah. What have you found to be kind of the most impactful executive development activity? I mean, obviously within coaching, you know, is there a common thread that you find with most of your clientele in terms of the things that they need most in terms of being successful and scaling up their business?
They're curious. They're incessantly asking questions. They don't assume they know anything. And they're voracious readers, podcast listeners, blog readers. They just want to experience as much learning as they can. And what I help them do is make it more directional. What learning is going to apply to you, to where your business at today, to help get you to the next level?
Hmm.
And that relationship turns out being to be very helpful for them.
Do you work with them on workplace culture issues that they might have?
Yeah, but because I think it's part of people. You know, a lot of people, like there's companies, they've been around 25 years and they have unwritten values, but they haven't clarified them for the team.
Mm.
They don't hire to them. They don't coach the people to them or recognize or constructively give feedback to them. And that creates a problem in the culture and ultimately turnover or instability.
And do you help them map that out and communicate that out to their rank and file?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very important. I've said so often with my clients where, you know, they kind of say, what's your secret sauce? And I said, well, one of the things that we try to really do is understand what your company culture workplace is about, because that's probably the most important filter. You know, any recruiter can throw 100, if not 1,000 resumes that match the qualifications of a job. But, you know, what does that CEO really define as his workplace? And a lot of times, and I identify what you said, it's hard for them to put that into words and probably even tougher to communicate it.
Agreed.
What about some of the other issues you find inside organizations? What are some of the biggest obstacles from scaling up and growing?
I think one of the elements is in strategy. So we all know markets are changing, and a lot of companies understand what their clients value about them. But what also is important is how is your company distinctive? So you and me have been in the staffing industry, Brent, for a while, and there's a lot of competition. And everybody says they have a database of 1 million people, 1,000 people. They'll get your resumes in 72 hours or less. Everyone's saying that. But what's unique about it? Nothing for most people. But if you're not unique, you're going to get commoditized.
Yeah.
So even if I work really hard, I'm going to get my share of the market, but it's going to be even harder to keep it, and the margins within my share are going to drop. So what we want to help our clients do is identify, not every client is ideal. Who's the ideal client? Most profitable, easy to work with, graciously refers you, pays their bills on time. And once we know that client, what do they value and what do we do in delivering it that's unique? And then we have to craft a go-to-market message that makes that abundantly clear so other like-minded prospects are magnetically attracted to that proposition.
Right.
And that's what we do. It takes time, but we help clients reposition themselves so that they do have a growing market share because of that.
Yeah. Most companies have some sort of employee retention issue, Herb, and I'm sure you've seen your share both on the staffing side and in your consulting business. What's kind of the common thread? If you were to look back at both your current clients as well as in the staffing industry, you know, what would you say is kind of the major issue that really affects or really is deleterious towards retention of employees?
So you've probably seen these surveys, Brandt, but the number one reason why people leave their job is they don't respect or worked well with their direct supervisor.
Yeah. It's not about pay, as most people think.
Yeah. No. So I think that goes back to an earlier part of the discussion today about a lot of managers, we call it, are you playing chess or are you playing checkers?
Right.
And so if I'm playing checkers, every piece is identical and moves identically the same way. That's what a manager does. A leader understands a chessboard where each piece is unique, valued, has a purpose in the game, and you have to master all the pieces to be a leader and win that game. That's the great leader of people that will retain their staff. The second thing is a company with bad retention is not clear about their values and purpose, does not hire to it, does not coach to it, and does not top grade people out when they're not a fit to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually one or more of those three or four things is enough to lose people, right?
Yes.
If they don't understand it, that's one thing. They can't communicate it. That just doubles it. It's almost an exponential relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You said something earlier, which I really identified with, which was the, you know, that area of, you know, retention and just how important it is for companies to, you know, communicate out that culture. Do you buy in and agree that that really has to come from the top, whether it's that owner or CEO, or do you think other folks within the organization can be deployed, particularly in larger groups and larger organizations, to communicate that culture?
I think it begins at the top, yet it has to be cascaded all throughout. I think you can't settle for just it being in the middle or the rank and file, because it won't last.
Yeah, well, I agree. And with regards to your current clients and thinking about kind of the trajectory that they go on, Outside of culture and outside of getting the right people in the right seats, you know, big belief in good to great. What are some of the other key levers or buttons that you think folks have to push in order to really, you know, have not only that kind of short-term growth, but sustain that growth over time?
Yeah, so we look at four major decisions that you have to get right over time. People, strategy, execution, and cash. And your focus on the decisions will vary as your journey continues. So for an example, one client I went to had people issues. They had major turnover, a lot of culture instability, retention, drama. We needed to start in the people area first. As they got more stability, better coaching, better leadership, intention to the values, our market wasn't growing. So then we had to go to strategy. I had another client that had incredible strategy, great inbound lead pipeline, but their execution was awful. They had 40% of their new client onboarding falling off in the first 90 days.
Wow.
So we had a pivot to execution, accountability, KPIs, dashboards, huddles, meeting rhythms that all got alignment, coordination, and ultimately execution. We then had another company that was growing so quickly, they had a cash issue, their margins were not sufficient, and their AR was way off. So even though they had order after order after order, they were growing broke. And so we needed to work on cash tools and decisions that allowed them to ultimately become self-funded. But that's where the journey evolves at different stages of your growth.
Yeah, fascinating. Great. Well, Herb, this has been wonderful. Really appreciate the insights that you provided. Terrific from a family business standpoint, but also in your with Aspire Growth Advisors and the work that you're doing there. We're just about out of time, but we always have one last question we ask all our guests, and that's, what kind of, you know, career and life advice would you give someone that perhaps has their, you know, eyes on the corner office someday, or like yourself, you know, has that entrepreneurial itch and wants to start their own company?
So my advice is for the entrepreneurs. I truly believe you deserve the company of your dreams. And I've seen a lot of people start companies that they're doing something that they really enjoy. And as the business grows, because they're good at what they enjoy, it changes. Now I got to hire people. Now I have to deal with payroll. Now I got to deal with insurance and scheduling. And that dream turns into a proverbial nightmare. And what I hope for you and what Scaling Up did for me, it gave me a methodology that over time helped me control and accelerate my growth while holding on to the dream of the type of business that I wanted to run. And I wish that for all of you and your listeners, that you create businesses that you run versus a business that runs you.
Amen. Herb Cogliano is the former Chief Executive Officer of Sullivan & Cogliano at IT Staffing and Workforce Solutions, and he currently advises entrepreneur business owners and their senior leadership teams all over the world who desire more growth, more freedom, and less drama scaling their business. Herb Cogliano, thank you so much for sharing your journey into the corner office.
It has been my pleasure, and I hope to talk to you somewhere down the road.
Thank you for listening to Into the Corner Office with Brant Hanley. We hope you enjoyed hearing our guest CEO story as much as we did. If you want to hear more CEOs reveal their journey into the corner office, please subscribe via iTunes and tell your friends and colleagues. For more information about Brandt, Resource Options International, and the Mighty Middle Market, visit www.goforroi.com. We look forward to having you join us for our next episode.